You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking, I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the New Books Network channel. This is Daniela Gutierrez, your host in the New Books on Food channel. And today I'm really happy to have here Lindsay Gardner with us, who will be talking to us about her new book entitled Why We Cook, Women on Food, Identity, and Connection. Thank you so much, Lindsay. Welcome.
Thank you for having me. Great to be here.
Okay, so to begin, I would like to ask just if you could tell us a little more about yourself and in general, how did this book come to be, where your ideas came from that eventually materialized in this beautiful book?
Thank you for that. Absolutely. I am an artist and illustrator primarily, and I'm also a mom, and I have two daughters. They're 5 years old and 8 years old right now. The idea for Why We Cook really started to take root in me in 2018. I've always loved to cook and been interested in food, but I was at that time thinking a lot about my relationship to cooking and how my relationship to cooking had changed after I had become a mother, spending more time in the kitchen every day, cooking for other humans, trying to think deeply about why I cared so much about food and the traditions and knowledge base that I was sort of passing down to my daughters. I also was thinking a lot at the time about how my art practice overlapped with my interest in cooking and sort of how the two processes were similar or different in different ways. And what happens usually when I have a sort of thought process like that is I end up taking the thoughts and questions that I'm mulling over into my studio to try to figure them out or work on them. So, of course, in this scenario, I found myself, you know, thinking a lot while I was cooking and then taking those thoughts into the studio and painting. And eventually the two things sort of merged together and I started reaching out to women in my life about some of the topics I was thinking about, like how women balance so many different things in their life. You know, I was a freelance illustrator. I had two young kids, you know, balancing cooking and domestic responsibility with career ambitions and raising children, with all of the other things in life. So I was thinking about those things and then also sort of the art form of cooking and the meaning that it imbues in our everyday lives. So I started talking to other women about that. And the idea really started to blossom from the standpoint of, you know, women's stories over time in cooking haven't been told in the same way as their male counterparts. I, for one, not being part of the culinary world, was really interested in exploring women's perspectives on cooking and food, both from the home cook's angle, which was my angle, and then also from all of the other women working in the culinary fields, food writing, you know, chefs, recipe developers, different forms of media. And I really, in this process, I started thinking, well, why isn't there a book where all of these women's voices are represented? I really want to turn to a book right now that investigates and explores women's stories in the culinary landscape. And there just wasn't a book like that. I also was loving thinking about food and my art practice. And so it was really sort of a merging of those two things where I was like, I want this book to be a thing in the world. And I also want to make the art to go with it. And so that was really the seed of the idea.
Mm-hmm. Well, so for our listeners, this is a book that compiles essays, interviews, recipes, statistics, quotes with your beautiful illustrations, both of the food and the women. And it includes over more than 100 women, right? And I think one of the things that struck me first is that the book is called Why We Cook, and yet it not only includes cooks. So I thought that was very interesting, that cooking is so much more than just putting some ingredients together. It's also growing the food. It's also developing recipes or fighting for food justice. So I just wanted to ask you about the selection of wonderful women, and how did you come about to selecting them and reaching out to them to participate in your book?
Absolutely. Yeah. So there are, like you said, there are 112 women in the professional culinary landscape featured in the book, in a variety of different kinds of content, essays, reflections on memorable meals. There's 11 recipes in the book, et cetera. And when I started working on the book in 2018, I was lucky enough to be living in the Bay Area, which was my home until very recently for about 17 years. And the Bay Area, as I'm sure you know, is just such a completely wonderful place for food and creativity in the culinary world. There's just so much happening there. And so I really, at the time that I was starting to work on the idea, benefited from just being immersed in a community of women that were and are doing incredible things. And that was really where a lot of my research started. So at the time, I had the pleasure of getting to go to an event that was an annual event that is put on by La Cocina, which is an incredible organization that supports low-income food entrepreneurs in the Bay Area. And they do this event every year called Food and Beverage Voices in the Kitchen. And so I heard a couple of people speak at that event, or rather read their writing at that event, that really inspired me. And a few of them are in the book now, are in Why We Cook. Osai Yendelin is one of them. Another friend of mine is Bonnie Sui, who wrote an essay for Why We Cook. And through these sort of, you know, personal friendships and also the networks that were at play in the Bay Area at the time, I started to sort of blossom my network as I was doing research. And so it was a really wonderful combination of sort of people generously putting me in touch with other people that they thought might be interested in talking to me about what I was looking into. And then also just straight up cold calling different people all over the country and the world who I was interested in. And I really found that one of the most exciting and fulfilling parts of this project was actually that outreach and I think part of it is because I'm not part of the culinary world. I'm not a food writer. My main background is art and literature. And so I think that maybe on the other end, and I don't know this for sure, but, you know, for people who were on the receiving end of my calls and emails, there was a curiosity on their part also, because I am not the typical food writer that would be reaching out to them about featuring a recipe in a book or whatnot. So I really kind of went about it from the standpoint of overlapping creative processes. And it was important to me from the very beginning to feature as wide a range of women working in the industry and around the industry as possible. And for me, just again, like not being part of that world, that automatically included the people who form our opinions and thoughts and knowledge base as home cooks in the industry. So that would of course include food justice activists, food writers, cookbook authors, as well as chefs and restaurateurs. I really wanted to represent the complete picture. And I also, it was very important to me to include the voices of home cooks who are also represented in the book, because of course that was my perspective on cooking. And so what was really exciting was to see sort of all these various perspectives start to overlap in the book, and how many, as you said, how many topics sort of are threaded through the book in a very organic way, because food and cooking is a place that everyone can connect to from a different perspective, but with many overlapping ideas at the same time. So, you know, there are themes that come up in the book that talk about immigration, for example, or motherhood, or environment, or the idea of home. Those are all things that sort of naturally and organically came out of the process of talking with people. The research process was often like I would go back and forth with one of the contributors, and we would sort of get to know each other in a conversation and toss around a few ideas, and then they would go away and think about it, and then they'd come back. And so it really felt very organic from start to finish. And I think one of the most exciting things about being at this point, you know, now with the book as a finished object that people can hold in their hands and flip through, is that I feel like this conversation just keeps going, that there are so many more women doing incredible work all over the world that, you know, it's sort of like there could just be like endless volumes of this book that, and that I think for me, being involved in it from the beginning is really satisfying, knowing that this is an incredible group of women compiled in this book, and there are also so many more women doing this work. So I could have just kept going. Yeah.
No, I really liked, as you said, that you tried to have a complete picture. Of course, one can never have it, but I think the book does such a great job in casting a very wide net that includes so many women from very different backgrounds. And I was very pleasantly surprised at the amazingly diverse array of voices that are represented in your book, because as you mentioned, the stories and lives of male chefs have been recorded more than female cooks and chefs. But even more so, like we have female chefs, I don't know, like Julia Child, or that are part of a more elite context, who are frequently white. And here you have women of all over the world and all different ethnic backgrounds that I think really enrich the perspectives of what cooking means for different people in different parts of the world and different even moments in their lives.
Yes, that was, thank you for pointing that out. It was extremely important to me from the beginning, because, you know, going through the process of writing a proposal and then you know, finding a publisher and selling the book. It was really interesting, actually, kind of casting around and hearing the feedback from various publishers in terms of how they conceived of what this book could look like. And it was something that I cared about deeply from the beginning, was that this, I didn't want the book just to feature the more well-known names in food and in the culinary industry. I also wanted to really find and highlight and shine a spotlight on the stories that don't often get represented in food media. And so that was a huge part of my research. Also, when I started digging into a lot of the stories that were out there at the time, it was right after the Me Too movement had sort of shaken the food industry in 2017. And also the more statistics that I read that were out there, the more I got really like pretty fired up about this idea. And that was, yeah, like, you know, right at the beginning, I learned that women represent almost 50% of food industry jobs, but they only hold something like, I think the statistic is 23 or 24% of head chef and head cook positions. And that percentage is even lower for women of color and LGBTQ. So, you know, just that alone, there, women have always been part of the story for as old as time. And women of color have also been part of the story forever. It's just that the stories haven't been featured. And so, or to the same extent, I should say. So that was, I felt very passionate about that from the beginning. And, you know, fortunate that in the era and the time that we're living in, that technology made it possible to be in touch with so many people all over the place. You know, I had the honor of talking with Chef Anna Ross in Slovenia. And then I also had, you know, the opportunity to interview Leah Penniman in upstate New York, all from California. So being able to connect with people in different formats all over the world was really also really important.
Yeah. And I like that you mentioned, no, historically there's been a distinction between like the male professional chef and the homey, cozy, good cook, but not artistic enough female, right? And your book just presents, even through your illustrations, like all the different facets of the work of women in food. I wanted to ask you about your process in writing and researching and editing and organizing this book, because it's really, its content is very unique. One would think when you have it in your hands, like beautiful hardcover and the illustrations, that it's a cookbook. And it is kind of a cookbook, but it's more than that, right? There's a lot of storytelling and, as you mentioned, statistics and very rigorous research around the topic of women in food. So can you just tell our listeners about how you chose this format, these different types of writing? You have longer essays, you have recipes, shorter participations. So just in general, your creative process in the writing of the book.
Yeah, for sure. So one of the great parts of writing and illustrating a book, and this is my first book that I've written and illustrated. I've illustrated other books, but not done both. It was a really big learning curve for me also, but what I learned through the process is the great benefit of being in the position of doing both things, because it really was a blank slate that I got to create. And that was really exciting, I think, because the way that I conceived about the book was from this multiple perspective, sort of kaleidoscopic perspective. And I wanted my art to be a huge part of the book from the beginning. So I wanted every page to have illustration. I wanted it to be, you know, somewhat equal weight from a design perspective on the words and the art, because to me, illustration is so related to storytelling. And that was a big part of my perspective going into it. You know, there are so many food books and cookbooks that are illustrated with photography, which is also beautiful. I love photography, but there's a different feeling about illustration that was really important to me to really emphasize from the beginning. And so, you know, thinking about how we structured the book, I really worked hard with my editor to basically create a jigsaw puzzle for this book that, if you can imagine this, we had a map with all the different pieces and content pieces, that for a reader, you could open the book at any point and sort of dive in from that place. Not that you wouldn't have to read it linearly from start to finish, but that, you know, you could read one essay at the end and a recipe at the beginning, and it would all still sort of flow.
Yeah, like a cookbook, so, in a sense, right? That you can open up and...
Exactly. Yeah. So I've heard, it's funny now that it's been out for a month and a half, I've heard from people who sit down with it actually like at lunchtime and they'll sort of read one essay while they eat. Or I've have friends who tell me that they read a little bit every evening before they go to sleep. And I love that. I love that you can sort of take it in small pieces a little at a time.
Snackable.
Yeah, exactly. I also worked really closely with my designer at Workman to sort of move the various puzzle pieces around in the design. And this is another benefit of being in the position of writing and illustrating was we designed the book together with all of my sketches. And so I finished the manuscript, got all of the contributors' various contributions around November of 2019. And by that point, I had done sketches of every illustration in the book. So the designer, her name is Sarah Smith. She was great from Workman. And she took all of my sketches and all of the written content and started laying everything out in batches so that we could sort of nail the design so that by the time I would move on to working on the final illustrations, I had a great sense of exactly where the illustration was going to go on the page. I would know if it was going to bleed off one side or be a small spot. I knew I had a real vision for what it was going to be like, so that when I sat down to do the final paintings, I really had a clear sense of where I was going. And it was actually great because by the time I started the final paintings for the book, we had just gone into lockdown for the pandemic in California. So
what's the final painting?
Sorry, what was that?
What's the final painting?
Oh, I mean, all of the final, you know, like the full color paintings in the book, that was all done from March of 2020 on, basically.
Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Get chef-prepared meals on the table in 2 minutes with Factor's ready-to-eat meals, so you can go back to doing what you love this spring. Looking for gourmet meals? Try meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini, and asparagus. And this is the part I really like. No fuss, no mess meals. Factor meals eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, or cleaning. You simply heat and savor the good stuff. Factor is the solution for fast, premium meals without the need for cooking. Head to factormeals.com/NBN50 and use code NBN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code NBN50 at factormeals.com/NBN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you, it's so interesting that you as an outsider, you know, you talk about how you're connected with the kitchen, like sort of like an analogous task of putting together colors and flavors. One can mm-hmm. cook only with colors, right? Like, oh no, this salad needs something red, and you add tomatoes. And so I wanted to ask, you mentioned photography, and it's true that so many cookbooks choose photography to illustrate, and not only cookbooks, right? Food memoirs or food writing in general. So what do you think mm-hmm. your art, your illustrations, and correct me if I'm wrong, they're watercolor?
Yeah, they're watercolor, sometimes a little bit of gouache, but mostly mm-hmm. watercolor.
So what do you think this, your particular like artistic view, and specifically watercolor painting, brings to the table, so to speak, that other media doesn't, like photography, or how is it different?
Yeah, I mean, I think, first of all, I should say that I also love photographed books. I pore over them in much the same way. But I do think that, you know, in my perspective, I think illustration lends a very personal feel. Like I said, I think that, you know, illustration historically has been used for storytelling. And that really was a big part of my approach to this book. You know, every person that's included, it was important to me that their voice really comes through. And so for me to bring my illustrations to it felt like a very pure way of honoring their stories, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. It was sort of my way of processing whatever they had shared with me and getting to know their stories in sort of a very small, intimate kind of way, where I was like literally trying to think through what they had shared or written and imagine myself in that scenario. So yeah, it was really, for me, it was really about honoring their stories and then sharing that in a visual way. And I think at the heart of that for me is sort of like a relationship of empathy and understanding that, you know, every small part of these moments are worth sort of savoring in a visual way. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really what it was about for me. It was like these small moments or big moments that people described, sort of calling attention to what makes parts of our everyday life really special.
Yeah, when I was browsing through the illustrations, specifically the food illustrations, it's sort of the art brings out like the more artistic, colorful, aesthetic part of food, whereas maybe a picture is more referential, right? And an illustration evokes a completely different reaction from the spectator or the reader.
Well, it's interesting. Yeah, that's a good point. It's interesting because when I was just thinking about this, I was flipping through another cookbook, and the photography in cookbooks is always so beautiful. And there's something so aspirational about that impulse that we have when we look through cookbooks and we see these like just gorgeous photographs, and that is an inspiration, or it can be an inspiration for wanting to try a recipe. But I think that when I would say like, you know, trying to recreate a food image in illustration, I'm thinking of maybe like there's a one that I illustrated for Leticia Landa from La Cocina, actually. And for me, it was really more about thinking, you know, thinking about the relationship of those elements of a composition, like color mm-hmm. and shape and texture, and looking for those things in the image that I was creating and in representing the food that was described in words. And so that is a kind of an innately different perspective on representing food visually.
Yeah, no, they make you hungry, and also when you want to put them on your wall, you have both those reactions.
That's really sweet. Thank you.
I wanted to ask about your process as an artist, like did you work with photographs and then like translated them with the watercolor technique, or did you in some cases work with the food itself, or how did that work for you as an artist?
It was a combination of both. So when I was in touch with the contributors, I would ask them for any reference material that they felt was relevant to whatever they had written or shared with me. So since I just mentioned Leticia Landa, she comes to mind. She's the executive or the co-director of La Cocina in San Francisco. And she wrote this essay about her parents' immigration story from Mexico and how it relates to the work that she's doing now. And in that, she talks about a recipe for albóndigas, and she also mm-hmm. mentioned some of the textiles that she had inherited when we were talking. And so I asked her for the photographs of those textiles that she mentioned. So she sent me some snapshots, and that was pretty much it. And then I sort of took the pieces that she had written about and incorporated illustrations of those textiles in the final illustration. So it was a combination of sort of like looking at images of boiled eggs, you know, on Google or whatever, and then using her snapshot materials and then imagining a scene sort of on my countertop. So that's one example. And then, you know, on the other end of the spectrum, I was working on portraits of different women in their kitchens. That's another strain of content through the book. And those I worked really directly from the photographs, and was in touch actually with most of, I think all of the photographers, the source material for those photographs, which was also really fun. So it really kind of ran the gamut, but photography is a big part of my source imagery for sure. I just work in different ways with it. You know, sometimes I'll set something up on my own countertop to get the right angle that I want to look at, or pull from a variety of source material to paint one thing.
Mm-hmm. And is there a specific reason that you focused on watercolor in this case, or?
I've been working with watercolor as a medium since I finished my MFA in painting in 2010. I love watercolor because it is so direct, and I can set up what I need with relatively few materials. It just feels like a really sort of, I guess direct is the best word for me. And I also really love, there's this delicate balance with watercolor where you have a lot of control over the medium, and then you also don't in a certain way, because the water might dry faster on a very hot day, or you know, it might run in a direction in a small part of the painting. I just love the element of water being part of these paintings, and I've always loved that about the medium.
It feels very organic, right? The illustrations, and in that sense, is your description of working with watercolor, the sort of uncertainty of the final result it's similar to cooking, right? You have to play with it.
Yeah.
and kind of let yourself go and let the ingredients guide you. And sometimes, you know, you end up with something that's completely different. And there is something about the illustrations that really kind of communicates that to the reader, I think.
That's such a great point. Yeah, I love that analogy. And I think you're absolutely right in that, you know, there is also sort of this layering that I do with the paint, where I sort of make a move and then wait. And there is a certain amount of patience that comes with working in any art form, but especially in watercolor, because I have to let each layer dry before I can add more color or more saturation. Mm-hmm. And so it is a little bit like putting an ingredient in, stopping and tasting it, letting it do its thing, whether it's like searing or simmering, and then, you know, adding a little something. It's very, it is a very organic, natural process. And I think it involves sort of being able to slow down and really mm-hmm. like get into your senses, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. No, they really complement the texts. I mean, they complement each other very, very beautifully. I also wanted to ask if you can share with our listeners some of your favorite stories or anecdotes or profile from the women in the book that are your favorite or that particularly struck you when you were putting together the book.
Yeah, you know, two that come to mind. One of the most sort of interesting and I mean, they're all interesting, but one of the most fascinating threads that sort of revealed itself through various contributors' stories that I wasn't expecting was this sort of connection to immigration and the idea of home and what home means. And many contributors have parts of what they wrote that touch on that, but two that come to mind are food writer and recipe developer Yawande Komolafe, and then also Minara Begum and Emily Stagidis of Bandu Gardens in Detroit. And Yawande wrote an essay about her own immigration story to the U.S., and which was fairly fraught. And she was unable to travel back to Nigeria, which is where she was from originally, for about 2 decades. So what she wrote in the book is a story about her first time being able to travel back to Nigeria after 20 years and the meal that she had with her family the first evening that she arrived. And that story has just consistently stuck with me and really has made me think about a lot of how I relate to the idea of home and how food can sort of transport us across oceans and through memory and how we sort of tap into our sense of identity through exploring our food heritage. So that's one. And then also Bandu Gardens, which is a really unique story about a community of Bangladeshi women who created an organization to sort of work with the vegetables that they were all growing in their backyards and in urban Detroit, and the partnership and community that has sort of resulted from working together to sort of take their vegetables and offer them to the restaurant community. And it's really grown and blossomed into this whole movement of empowering women, immigrant women in the Detroit area. Mm-hmm. So it's really amazing. I think like that's just one example of a theme that has kind of come up in multiple places from multiple perspectives about something that I don't even think I predicted would come out of doing this research or talking with people. But of course, it's such an important part of the story about food. You know, everybody came from somewhere else in the United States at one point. And I think in that way, like in this political moment that we have been in, especially in the last 5 years, like definitely during the time that I was writing and researching the book, it felt so, reassuring on a human level to be able to have these conversations with people from so many different backgrounds at a time that was so upsetting in the United States and continues to be in many ways, that food is a place that we can really come together to talk about our differences and our commonalities, and that everyone has something to share in that department. That was a little bit of a sidebar, but definitely something that was really fulfilling that came out of the project for me.
Yeah, and just the fact that food is political, and that it can be a lot of these women in very different ways show how it can be a force for social change, no matter what the context or the reach they have, right?
Absolutely, absolutely, yeah.
Do you think you learned something as a home cook or as an artist while curating this book?
Oh, yes. So many things.
Recipes?
In addition to the recipes, I think, you know, I say this, I talk about this in the introduction to the book, which I wrote, of course, at the end of writing and researching the book. But when I think back to where I was in 2018 and sort of what inspired me to actually try to do this project, it was really all about my, you know, if I'm going to distill it down, it was a drive for my own sense of connection. And I was sort of, I think when I think back on it, I was sort of grappling to understand, like, how am I part of this bigger framework? And I know that there's something that connects me to it, but what is it exactly? And I think that what I've learned is that through all of these various perspectives of women that are shared in the book, that we do share so much connection, and being in conversation with these women and learning their stories and learning so much about what I didn't know before put me in connection with them. And that's what I learned that I love about cooking, is that cooking is the doorway to understanding and learning and trying new things and learning people's stories, and really investing in what that means. And I think that's why at the end of the day, like when I think back about what I've learned, it's that I love the questions that are involved in cooking, and I love the great potential for learning and empathy and connecting with other people that naturally is a part of doing it and engaging in the process. And of course, I also learned a lot about what I love to do with painting and how I love to collaborate with other people. And I love research and reading, and I learned a lot about all of those things through the process.
You said this project began in 2018, right?
Yes.
So obviously no one was expecting a global pandemic to hit as it did last year. But I was, you know, when the pandemic started and everybody was quarantining and restrictions were tougher on everybody, everybody was cooking, right? Everybody was inside and spending, I know I was, like, spending so much time in the kitchen, trying new things, calling, you know, my mom and my aunts to ask for things that I had never cooked, like to seek those connections in a moment where we were literally so disconnected from the world, from everybody, mm-hmm. right? So how do you think, because I think the fact that it has been published now really brings a different dimension to all of these things that you're talking about connection and empathy and really comfort in the shape of food.
Yes. So it's definitely something, as you said, I could never have predicted when I started out on the project. But really, it's been pretty great to see the book come to life in this moment, in an odd way, because to me, the pandemic and the social uprisings that have happened in the face of so much tragedy and hardship in the last year and a half have almost strengthened the message of the book. And that's another layer that I never could have predicted, that, you know, I had this inkling that there was so much more to explore here, and that these messages have just been, you know, strengthened by everything that's happened in the last mm-hmm. year. You know, women have left the workforce in staggering numbers. You know, we've obviously, like, gone through a huge social movement with Black Lives Matter. There's been so much about the restaurant industry that has been revealed right. yeah. through the pandemic, for a lot of people who maybe didn't know about food systems and how they operated before. There's just been this sort of veil that's been, I think, hard to ignore for everyone.
So, and even the link between the actual pandemic and the way our food system works right now, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and I, you know, I consider myself, at least in the last few years, like fairly aware of what's going on in the food world through the research process. But even I was learning so much in the moment of the pandemic about where my food was coming from, literally, and the people that was impacting, and frontline workers who were responsible for harvesting the food that we eat every day. Mm-hmm. And just, I think there's just a level of things that are easy to take for granted, to say it bluntly, every day in everyday life, that I think the pandemic has just really cast a light on in a different way. And I don't think, you know, I'm just speaking personally, like, I don't want that to go back to normal. I want to know about where my food is coming from and the people who are working so hard to be able to, you know, put a fresh apple in my grocery cart. It's stuff that I'm glad that I know, and mm-hmm. I think has changed me as a home cook and as a consumer. And I think that has been a lot of people's experience on a sort of broad level. Mm-hmm. I also think that you make a great point that there has been this new relationship to cooking that people have started to kind of talk a lot about more in the last few months, is sort of like this oscillation between loving to cook in this moment and then having total burnout, which of course is totally natural. And like all the many projects that people have started, like from, you know, sourdough starters to you know, preserves and whatnot. And I definitely had my fair share of those in the last year too. But I think one thing that really has stuck out to me through all the home cooking in the last year especially is just sort of the sense that there's no one way to be a home cook. And mm-hmm. I think that is something that that also has come through in my research process with the book, is just talking with other women home cooks about what inspires them, what they do when they get in a rut, you know, how many times they cook every week, and just getting real honest perspectives about that, which isn't something you hear a lot in food media. And I think that I have thought about that a lot in the last year, because like I said, like there have been times when I'm on a total streak and I want to make my own bread. And then there are times when I'm like, I can't cook another meal. Indeed. And that's okay. And I don't think that would have been my perspective, you know, 3 years ago. I think that I've come to sort of learn about how, just like being an artist or being a writer, like there are phases of your life when you are really inspired, and there are moments when you're just really not. And looking at cooking from that way has been liberating.
Yeah, absolutely. I really appreciated one of the questions you have in the book that you asked some of the women. What do you eat or what do you cook when you don't want to cook anymore, right? And some said, oh, well, I order in, or like pasta. And I think, you know, I think I'd be embarrassed to even say in public what I eat when I don't want to cook anymore. and such a big part, like you mentioned in the book that 90% of cooking in this survey you did is done by women, right? That's mm-hmm. a lot. That's a lot of labor, right? It's a lot of physical exhaustion, a lot of time on your feet for sure. So I really appreciated that you brought this side of like the cooking labor to the conversation, that I think, because we all love food and it's great, tends to be a little bit forgotten, that it's hard work.
Yeah. And I think when you think about that in the context of the pandemic, you know, obviously the home cook surveys that I did were done in 2019. So this was pre-pandemic, but if you took that same question and asked people now, for the last year, you know, you'd get a whole different picture. And I think that you'd see a huge variety from people who's, you know, who are sharing their cooking responsibilities probably more equally with their partners, to not, to having doubled down on the impact of that labor. Like when you're working from home and you're responsible for your children's education and you're also cooking all the meals. And so, you know, there are, we haven't had the full range of options, to go out for dinner when we're really tired, or go have dinner with a friend or whatever. And so, you know, that focus, I think it'd be really interesting to do a whole nother round of surveys about women and cooking through the pandemic, because it just hasn't been easy for everyone. And that's from, you know, my privileged perspective. I think then you can also look at the layers of all the different people who are impacted by the pandemic, from, you know, healthcare workers to frontline workers, and thinking about how cooking is for them and their lives. And then also for women who are professionals in the culinary industry, you know, women chefs are also home cooks. And so thinking about how, you know, the pandemic has sort of put another layer of exhaustion in that framework is another, that's a whole nother conversation.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Lindsay. This has been great to talk to you. I just wanted to ask one last question. What are your next projects? What are you working on now or in the future?
Well, I am loving having conversations about why we cook, and it's been really satisfying and fulfilling to be able to continue some of the conversations that I started with the women contributors in the book, in, you know, getting the book out there and talking with people now that it is out in the world. So I've been very busy with that, and probably will be for some time, but that's been really great. And I'm also looking forward to getting back into my studio and painting, because it's been a big time, and I really miss having the day-to-day painting time. I would also love to illustrate a cookbook. That's a goal on my horizon. So
I'm
just going to put that out in the universe.
I would really look forward to seeing that. So can you just share with the listeners, where can they reach you on social media, or know more about you and your work?
Yes. So you can find me on Instagram at Lindsay Gardner Art, and that's Lindsay with an F, excuse me, it's Lindsay with an A, LINDSAY, Gardner Art. And you can also find the book at whywecookbook.com. Or anywhere books are sold.
Great. Perfect. Yeah. Everybody go and do that, because it's truly a very beautiful book that, you know, brings tiny bits of joy in these hard times. So thank you so much, Lindsay, for joining us today, and take care.
Thank you so much. It was such a pleasure to be here.